WildTalkRadio.com.
Goodness. Saturday had a show. Some called the world's end. And sometimes it just felt like an extended Dynamite. Anyway, this is CB Radio Not So Live, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. WildTalkRadio.com, CBRadioLive.com, chat. If you have that Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch accounts, call Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can use Critical Rock Stock in the Fortnite item shop to buy the man you cannot see and more. Hashtag Epic Partner. I'm the producer, joined as always by the intern. But hey, we have Casey. I have no voice.
That... We have yeah, ooh-ooing. I'm here, not ooh-ooing. I can't argue against... Sometimes it being like a Dynamite. You're not wrong, but I mean, overall, I enjoyed the show.
It was World's End. What was your overall thoughts?
I enjoyed it. I don't know. I mean, there's always an argument when I know at least when you and Brent talk about these shows where yes, they are very long. I never feel like that they're long, but I'm also not the most critical person in the world, so I just kind of enjoy the wrestling for the wrestling.
Yeah.
I can see where the argument of like the shows are really long come from.
This wasn't long. It just felt like
there were definitely some matches. Great. Yeah, there were definitely some matches on the show that they maybe didn't they could have put on Dynamite, but
it felt like an extended Dynamite because the matches just weren't pay-per-view level was more the
yeah,
point.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say at least one of them wasn't kind of on purpose. It just happened to go that way based on circumstances, a.k.a. Keith Lee not being medically cleared. But
no, we'll get into that one. That's not good.
Oh, absolutely.
There was another one that was affected by things outside of the ring, and we'll touch on that as well.
Hey, you're here. You found the voice for now.
Well, yeah, I jumped on my phone because somehow desktop Discord did not want to work well. So
here we are. Okay.
Here we are.
Here we, in fact, are. And I have a voice at the moment. So, we're going to get through this as we normally do. Chat, at the end of the show, we'll have your pick'em results. See how experts did or didn't do. Because they were throwing.
They were.
They were clearly throwing.
Yeah, they kind of threw a few matches.
Yeah, on purpose. And whether they admit to it or not, we'll get to that. We'll also have the fantasy results for the season. So we have the final scores. We'll talk about them. But Brent, talk to me about the pre-show and what happened.
All right. So first up on the pre-show, we had the battle between Long Island, in which we had Chris Statlander taking on her good friend, Willow Nightingale, all because of one Stokely Hathaway.
When did he become a bad guy?
He's always been one.
I thought he was. They were kind of doing something with him where he was like sort of nicer, but maybe that was just because
that's his ROH character.
Okay. I didn't realize when he like walked through that imaginary force field, he became shitty Stokely Hathaway again.
Yeah, it feels like he did.
Well, and they talked about it on commentary when they were like, "You're on the board of directors, right?" Yeah. Isn't this a conflict of interest? He's just like, shut up.
It's a sign that the ROH storytelling really doesn't matter.
I mean,
no.
At least they touched on it, I guess.
Well, here's the problem. The ROH storytelling doesn't apply because these are two AEW talents.
Yeah.
They're not Ring of Honor. So I don't know where this cross amalgamation is. But then again, ROH titles are being defended on AEW TV more than they are Ring of Honor television anyway.
Also really not wrong.
Matter. It doesn't really matter what they're
doing. We had one of the biggest things happening at this pay-per-view concerning the ROH world title, which is a secondary belt now because it's part of a triple crown.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But it was a good back and forth, and apparently we got a geography lesson about Long Island and how it's made up of two different counties, which each girl is from.
I feel like Taz had the time of his life on Saturday night.
Taz having to explain exactly what Long Island is.
He's just like
Suffolk County versus... It was just like, oh my God.
But I mean, he also threw himself under the bus a couple times. I think there was one time where he was like, listen, I know a lot about Long Island, but I don't know anything about anything else.
Yeah.
He's self-aware.
Yeah. He was, yeah, you know, he's like, he, yeah, 100% self-aware. And
other announcers got a little bit of shine later in the show that we'll talk about as well.
Okay. So what happened? But
it was a good back and forth, I would say, for about 95% of the match.
Uh-huh.
Then the finish happened.
You were telling me about it. What happened?
So Willow Nightingale was trying to attempt this gut-wrench powerbomb, and she tried, and she tried, and she tried. This is one of those things where you're just like, yeah, this match probably went a bit longer than it should, because you could tell by the end when Willow's trying to pick up Chris and Chris is trying to help her, it's just not working. She can't hit this gut wrench. And at one point she dropped Chris on her head and you could hear all the announcers going, oh, audibly on the commentary. And finally she hit the powerbomb, which didn't look great, and she got the win, which was a bit surprising. And then, you know, they did the whole, like, they hugged after the match and Stokely went off sulking and pissed off because it didn't work. But yeah, that finish kind of took, I mean, it was a good match between two capable wrestlers, but it just kind of happened, like, when they couldn't get that part done, it really felt off and not good. And it's something that Tim has brought up before. Like, if a spot doesn't work, like, try to go to another.
Yeah, you got to have something. You have to be able to have something in the backup for when things like that don't work. And, like, it has to be, you can't just, like, oh, let's try it again right away. There's got to be some sort of cover in between. If you're hard set on using that spot, that move, that finish, you got to figure out a way to circle back to it without making it look like you're just trying and failing a bunch of times.
But Willow got the win. Surprise.
Yep, Willow picked up the win.
I mean, if you looked at my picks, I expected it to go the other way, but I'm not mad that Willow won. I just figured it would go to Statlander.
They seem high on Willow, so I'm not overly surprised. At the same time, it's one of those things of, like, does this lead to a Statlander heel turn eventually? I don't know if that's the best thing to do. Mm-mm. But I'm, because also the other side of it would be, like, if you wanted to do something else, you turn the smiley, happy, has an upbeat entrance theme Willow Nightingale heel to put with Stokely.
But you've already started turning your already upbeat personality's heel.
Well, AEW has a problem in terms of heels anyway, and it was evident in this show. You have heels doing very heelish things, but then the crowd is just cheering them. And AEW's response is just, well, we're going to keep them heel. At least with other companies, it's like, if they're starting to get cheered, it's like, okay, maybe we'll turn them a little. Maybe we'll, you know, we'll make them a little more ambiguous, or it's like, we'll kind of soften the heel side. Nope, that's not what they did this night. They turned into that skin.
All right, what else happened on this pre-show?
Next up was your 20-man battle royal. The winner of this match was going to get an AEW TNT title shot anytime, anywhere they want. That didn't telegraph anything for us.
Nope. Not at all.
So we had 20 people, which included Lance Archer, which everyone was saying, this is going to be my pick to win. I don't know why Lance Archer hasn't won anything.
Hey, once every 3 month appearance on AEW television.
That's really true. Weird, but I didn't. Then we had Killswitch, who was the other boy. This is everyone's pick to win, mostly because with everything that was going on with the TNT title, made the most sense.
Yep, I put it in the chat.
You did in fact put it in the chat, yes.
Both the big guys get started in this match, getting jumped, and then, of course, buried under tables and chairs and everything. Your typical big guy spot of, we're going to eliminate them for a good portion of this match. Keiji, I want you to remind me of something.
Okay.
What are the rules of a battle royal?
Oh, God.
As far as I know... I know exactly what you're talking about. Thank you for jogging my memory. You have to go over the top rope, not in between the second and top rope.
No, not and over a not, rope. It has to be the top
rope. And both over the top rope, and both feet have to touch the ground. Okay. Unlike one Johnny TV.
Johnny TV! So for those of you who did not watch this match, Johnny TV was put into a spot where he go, where, I mean, no fault of his own, he tried to go over the top rope.
Oh, he did, 100%. It just did not work, and I mean, he also didn't like try and compensate for it either. It was
he didn't try and like come back in to go back over the top, but he fell between the top and second rope, went to the outside, and then promptly got eliminated from the match. And everyone I know, like the second it happened, I messaged Rock. I was just like, apparently you don't have to go over the top rope in a battle royal anymore. Because they did announce him as eliminated. And then I went on to Twitter and everybody was just like,
will they play this? The top. Will they play this up in a TV storyline going forward? Because
probably.
Because it's what they like to do when they get called out for their mistakes.
Now, I would say that, but it's Johnny TV right now.
It's a perfect collision match.
Coming soon to Ring of Honor TV, Johnny TV versus Christian Cage for the TNT title.
You put it on Collision, it's fine. It'll work. They need matches. All right, so who won the Battle Royal?
Killswitch.
Yep, Killswitch came back and won this match in the very end, picking up the contract, the money in the, I mean, the TNT Anytime Anywhere contract.
Brass ring.
Boy, we won't see this happen later.
All right, and tell me about the other match.
The other match is your FTW rules match between Hook, your FTW champion, and your ROH Pure champion, which I think most people have forgotten about, Wheeler Yuta. The match started with Wheeler Yuta with a mic in his hand. And
that's
boy,
FTW.
That's
FTW rules for you.
Boy, does this prove that Wheeler Yuta really needs help on the mic.
I mean, at least, you know, with his indentureship to the Blackpool Combat Club, he's got the wrestling part down.
Yeah, no, for all intents and purposes, good wrestler.
Yes, very good wrestler, but definitely needs to work on his talking.
He tried to do that stereotypical heel promo of like, I'm going to trash where we're from, you know, oh, Long Island. And he had trouble for those about 3 minutes. He tried to talk about New York, and boy, that place stinks, but not as bad as Long Island. And unfortunately, the way I just put that was more coherent than what he did. There we go. That was about an accurate representation. But we ended up getting your FTW rules, which was essentially a hardcore, no rules match, which they tried to play up as, you know, oh, this is the antithesis of the pure rules match that, you know, Wheeler Yuta is used to.
I mean, it's not entirely wrong, but...
No, it's not wrong. It's just, it feels awkward.
Yeah, I mean, if they're trying to tell that story of like, you know, now that they've had this battle for one title, they can maybe go for the other one. But I mean, I don't know. It's also the FTW title and the Pure title, which if it's for the Pure title, the way that it's set up and the way that you're supposed to wrestle for Pure matches, they should, and I mean, maybe because it's ROH, they don't care, but that should be pushed as the quote unquote workhorse title because it's literally about like Pure wrestling, workhorse wrestling, not flashy stuff, not gimmicky things. So if they're going to, I don't know, they just need to push it more to give it a little bit more of a showcase than they should, in my opinion. But it's also ROH, so who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, Wheeler Yuta put on a good performance. Hook, Dill, you know, he does well with what he's given.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all, they're using Hook in a way that, like, doesn't, I don't know, they highlight what he can do, and at least he's not just like running through guys anymore. There's a little bit more
back and forth, a little bit more competition.
Yeah, they're fleshing out his matches more than they were before. So I'm sure he's putting in the work outside of the ring too. So he's slowly developing, but hopefully they kind of leave him where he is for a little while.
But he also hasn't grown. He's still in the same spot he was 2 years ago. It's hard.
Put him on TV too soon, and with the roster that AEW has,
it's hard. Yeah, with the roster they have, it's difficult to elevate and move people around. But it's like you would have thought maybe okay, he's FTW, maybe he goes international, or maybe TNT at some point,
or maybe this is them moving him up to the ROH Pure title, and then maybe through that route.
But that really isn't, I mean, is that a step?
Yeah.
Is it?
I mean, but for Hook, it could be.
For him, it could be, but it, I don't know, it just doesn't, our ROH titles don't mean much at this point. But neither does the FTW title, so. You want to see, in 2024, you want to see him take a step.
Yeah.
Somewhere. That isn't just, I'm Hook. Yep, here we are. Need more. Like, he's got to be, he's got to have a big match with a big name of some sort.
Who's not going to get suspended.
Who's not going to get suspended, yeah.
Well, yeah, you need to have something where it actually advances him. It's not just one match. And
get,
I mean,
him in,
like,
get him in the ring with Claudio and Danielson and get and see what he can do. Because at some point, you're going to have to figure it out and give him a main event match on Dynamite with a Danielson or a Moxley in this calendar year. And you go, okay, do we have something or we don't? Because you got to...
Yeah.
Find out.
Well, and I think also, if the Continental Classic has taught us anything about all of this, it's just, you know, like people were talking about, oh, the great matches that were put on here. Yeah, because you actually had top talent facing top talent in a lot of cases, and you had to get people with wins over other, you know, over individuals. That's why, like, Swerve versus Moxley, you had to get a winner.
Yeah.
And that's something that they've really avoided for a long time. It's like, oh, we don't want to put some of these guys up against people because then they may have to, you know, it may be like, but then Swerve will have to lose. Yeah. And then you figure out what you're going to do with him.
Yeah.
It's he picks up a loss here. Cool. Now what?
Well, hopefully that tournament kind of shows them that it's okay for some of those guys to lose every once in a while.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of tournaments, we don't need another tournament for a while, though.
Nope.
I have a feeling one's coming, but I don't know what you're going to call it, but I'm feeling one's coming. Don't need another tournament for a while.
Who's the TV champion? Is that still vacant?
TV champion has been decided. That's Kyle Fletcher.
Oh, that's right.
He won the, Survival of the Fittest match on Final Battle. Yes. Although he got pulled from his match here.
Yeah, weird.
For Takeshka. Well, it's also because, like, you just saw Fisher, you haven't seen Takeshka for a while, so it was their chance to be like, hey, let's put him in a match.
All right, let's get to this main show, because you just mentioned the Continental Classic. That's how we opened up the show, with all the losers of the Continental Classic.
In a big eight-man tag.
In a big eight-man tag team spectacular. It was a wild tag, I don't know, whatever they called it.
It was just an eight-man tag team match. That's what they...
It was Brian Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, Mark Briscoe, and Daniel Garcia taking on Brody King, Jay White, Roosh, and the man who lost every single match just about in the classic, Jay Lethal.
Yeah, someone had to do it.
Him and Mark were the fall guys in that classic.
Yeah, but like at least Mark Briscoe's argument for why he didn't perform as well as maybe people expected him to, it kind of tracks with it being his rookie year as a singles competitor, being a tag team guy for basically the bulk of his career. Like, at least that's like a believable argument to why he didn't perform as well as he did. And they're still giving him victories in tags and multi-man matches. So, like, clearly they're kind of leaning into that, be like, yeah, he's a team guy. He doesn't do much singles. He'll get there.
That's fine.
Yeah.
The match was fine too. Wasn't.
Yeah.
Match was good. One thing I do like is that, okay, I'm going to say everyone likes to harp on AEW having quote unquote long-term storytelling. But in this match, they did have a nice callback in the fact of you had Bryan Danielson and Daniel Garcia on the same team. 100%. And yet Bryan Danielson still doesn't trust Daniel Garcia after their matches a year ago?
Something like that. Yeah.
It was like Danielson was still looking at him. And I like the fact that it's like Daniel Garcia was about to do his dance for the introduction. You know, he's sitting on the ramp and he's about to start, you know, shaking his hips, and Brian Danielson's music hit. And you just see Garcia's face like, God damn it.
Oh, they called it an all-star eight-man tag. That was the phrase they used. All-star.
Okay.
I knew they gave some sort of tagline to it.
But yeah,
it was fine.
Everyone got a chance. Brody looked like a beast as normal. Jay White looked like an asshole. Lethal, of course, was the fall guy in this match because it's Jay Lethal.
And they put Daniel Garcia over, and hopefully they... Here's another thing. Everyone's talking, oh, he looked good in the classic and whatever, yada, yada, yada. Great. He got on TV for a few weeks in a row. Lead somewhere. But
I think it's leading to the House of Black, which would be good.
But that's fine. He needs wins. If you're going to do something with him, just don't say, oh, he performed well, and then 6 months later, then you finally do something. with him, or he's doing well, and then you just sort of, where did he go? And it's a thing they like to do. Like, he's doing really well, and then he got this big win over somebody, and then hi, I'm Action Andretti. I got a win over Jericho, and then haven't seen a television in a year.
Boy, can he drink a bottle of water.
I was going to say, that was the one thing I don't understand. So his entire gimmick now is essentially shotgunning a bottle of water, and he did it during the Battle Royal.
Got to get the gimmick over, brother. Gotta get it
but
over.
Why during the Battle Royal? Because
where else are you gonna do it? You can't do it in the middle of an actual match.
I mean, you could.
A Battle Royal with Danhausen. You can drink a bottle of water in half a second flat, and it'll be fine.
I get it. It's one of those things. Like, I just saw him, like, him and Dante were just, or him and Darius were like, stop, and then like shug the ball. I was just like, for fuck's sake.
I mean, I can't argue. I Superman punched a guy with a package of Ichiban noodles in my hand in a battle royal, so
okay, fair.
I have to argue for Action Andretti drinking a bottle of water.
Okay, next up,
anyway, Team Danielson got the win.
Yep, so team face / semi face won the match.
Team face for the night got the win.
So our next match was dubbed by Twitter as the loser leaves AEW match when we got Miro facing Andrade El Idolo, who was accompanied to the ring by one CJ Perry. Don't know if she's hopped up on antibiotics at the moment, but she was there, busted finger and all.
Were they saying loser leaves AEW before the match happened?
Yes.
Oh.
Because
this is what happens when you don't go on social media.
Because of the story that came out earlier in the day about Andrade. That's why they were talking it up.
I didn't realize the story dropped before the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It was that he was on bad terms with AEW. There was essentially irreconcilable differences, which I think was reported. And Andrade was finishing out his contract that night.
Ah.
But other people were jokingly calling it that because they were like, what if Miro throws the match and then just leaves? Because the rumor was that, you know, of course, Andrade was leaving. He'll probably end up like on Thursday or whenever. And they were like, and I saw the meme of like Miro when he realizes Andrade is going back to WWE. And it was the like Denzel Washington from Malcolm X, where he's like banging on the table. That was also used for Malachi Black at the same point as well. But it was, I don't know why, wherever Miro goes, they do this weird kind of storyline with him and his wife of like, she wants to be with other men, quote unquote, because it's happened in two federations now.
Well, I thought technically it was she wanted to be with him and he kind of just like was like, no. She's like, fine, I'll go find someone.
Yeah, just find someone to kind of be near him without. It's not a great story.
She's finding people essentially to feed to him.
Yeah, that's kind of the story they're doing, but in a weird way that it's not interesting. It's just.
Well, and the problem is so you've now done this with, what, two, three people? You've done the Daniel Garcia, who got fed to Miro. I want to say it was like Action Andretti.
Probably.
Was fed to Miro.
Yeah,
that and was now it's on. And now it's Andrade. So you either are going to have a really stupid face on your hand who CJ Perry is going to come along and they're going to be like, oh, I can use a manager and not see what's happened to three people before them. Or B, you've completely killed the story because now no one's going to want to work with her.
Well, because I think everyone will have seen what she did.
Right. But now you've done something weird where it's like she's just going to be in limbo.
Just give the people what they want. They want Perry and Miro as an act. Stop trying to convolute it and just...
Oh, God, I just thought of something.
And just give the people what they want. But they're not going to do it because the Miro character has sworn off his wife. So this is where we're at. What, Brent?
Rock, who's a free agent out there?
He's here to show the world. He's here... to show the world.
I was gonna say, who has experience with her?
Oh no.
Oh yeah. He's here to show the world, Cage.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I love
Come on.
I just realized that it was just like, oh no.
Show some spirit, Cage. He's coming.
The match was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. Miro won. Perry cost Andrade the match. It was all expected. It just, even before the rumor of Andrade leaving, it was expected that CJ would cost him.
Yeah. She took out his hands while he did the figure eight. Yeah. Boy, that's not a telltale sign. It's Andrade has now packed his bags. Like I said, possibly Thursday, considering that's the show his wife is on. I think that's the show that his former manager is on. His manager posted something on Twitter about she has a secret. All signs seem to be pointing that someone will be arriving.
You mean Friday? There's no show on Thursday.
Or Friday. Friday. My bad.
I was confused.
I can't remember which SmackDown's on anymore.
I was good confused. He's going to Impact Wrestling or TNA Wrestling? I mean, you know, point that one out.
But yeah, Miro won. Who knows what they're going to do with him now. It feels like he's treading water.
He's Miro.
it's Miro. Next up, we have possibly the best character that AEW has at the moment. For your AEW women's title, former champion Riho taking on timeless Toni Storm.
I enjoyed watching this match. I thought it was, of the, if you include the pre-show, three women's matches of the night, this one was the best.
I will give you that. It was the best women's match on the show. It was solid. Yeah. Tony's owning her gimmick.
Toni completely owns this. I love the inner... this. I can't believe I'm going to say this. This is honestly like how you use Luther.
Yep.
Not in that crazy deathmatch kind of thing. No. You have him as just the dopey butler character to her. It works. It works well. The one spot I loved is, so like Riho is, you know, probably what, 80 pounds soaking wet?
Probably.
She does the crossbody off the top rope. Luther catches her. And then basically just like hands her off to Toni. It's just like, well, here you go.
Your opponent, madam.
Exactly. And then Luther got tossed and the fans booed because he's one of the better things about what happened here. When it comes to Riho, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say that. She really needs something else than just being really happy, smiley, tiny girl.
Yeah.
There is nothing to her, which is the problem when she goes up against someone that has a really fleshed out character in Toni Storm, because Toni can like over exaggerate when she's doing the moves and it plays in perfectly to her character.
Yeah.
You know, when she, at the end of the match, when it's a rose petal parade, you know, or rose petal like shower coming down upon her and she's rolling around on the mat, works perfectly.
Yeah, that was very well done.
It's like all of this stuff fits within that character, and it's one of those things where it's like the character works within the match itself as well. Improving. Riho is what?
It's improving. The character's improving. Match.
Yeah.
Match.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's finding new ways. And it's like, I like that every so often they go to that one camera that's like shooting her in black and white during the match.
That's done well. But okay, to against your argument about Riho, she's not there enough for them to fully develop something for her. She's in and out. So they're going to just keep her with the smiley, "Hi, I'm Riho. I'm here for a month, and then I'm gone for 6 months."
She's kind of just a wrestler.
Yeah.
I hate to say this, then if she's only going to do that, she's not a big enough star to be like an attraction in that respect. It's like, yeah, she'll get a little bit of a pop, but more than likely I'm going to be like, oh, okay, it's Riho. I know exactly what I'm getting. I don't, whatever.
Yeah, but sometimes there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you like, if you want to draw something out, like a title run, then you can bring in someone like Riho who will give you a couple of weeks of TV and an opponent, even though, you know, 90% of the people know who's what the outcome of that match is. It's still going to be, the match is going to be good because Riho's a good wrestler, and it draws out, it gives someone who is a champion like Toni, it gave her time to kind of work with someone and continue to develop the character and continue to push a storyline, whether it's Mariah May getting ready to kind of betray Toni Storm or vice versa or whatever. It gives it time to draw that out. So like having someone of the wrestling caliber of Riho, even though she doesn't have like a gimmick or a character because she's not there enough, there's nothing wrong with it.
You don't need to change Riho because if she's there for a year, yes. She's there for two, three weeks at a shot? No. But I see your argument for it. She's not there enough to develop her more than who she is and what she is elsewhere, too.
Yeah, it's the same reason why I don't win titles. I'm not available enough.
There you go. All right. Next match. Swerve Strickland. Keith Lee. Nope. Not Keith Lee. Keith Lee is injured. Apparently he's been injured for over a year.
Oh, wow.
According to his tweet. It said since Arthur Ashe 2022. That's what he said. I thought I think
he's had something, and it's one of those, like, tried to fight through it, but probably made it worse.
And then he re-injured himself at Final Battle?
Yeah, against Shane.
Against Shane, and then he tweeted this out, like, at 5 p.m. that I'm going to try, but they're not going to let him. So it became Dustin Rhodes. Okay.
This match was...
pointless.
5 to 10 minutes too long.
Yeah.
This match should have been an angle,
so
not a match.
But if Keith Lee's injured the way he says he's injured, I mean, even if you just did the angle, the whole reason that they had this match for as long as they did is because maybe they had a time commitment that they had to live up to. So instead of just having Swerve come out and break Dustin's ankle or whatever, and then have it end. Is probably because they're like, well, we got to fill time, and we can't fill time with just Swerve coming out and hurting Dustin. So they're just like, well, we're going to give you the same match length. Go out there and do something with it.
I'm going to counter your argument with what they tell me on Collision every week. We have standby matches. Give me a standby match. Do an angle and give me a standby match. Do something, because this didn't need to be a thing. This is my one problem with AEW. Every match needs to feel like it's an equal footing. Sometimes there can be a match when a guy who you're pushing to the moon takes on someone who's not on TV, but once a month, if they're lucky, you let the guy you're pushing to the moon get a dominant win and not give somebody a hope spot, another hope spot, a hero spot, all these spots to make himself look like he's something. Swerve just went through a thing with Hangman Page where he hung him at the end.
Oh, no. He definitely should have squashed him.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 100% with you.
He should have squashed him in 5 minutes or less and been done. Just do an angle. Oh, you want to give him the hero spot where I'm going to stand up. Great. Get his face kicked in. Be done. Show Swerve is a dominant threat to someone. Now, what you did... here, he got a win over a guy he beat up before the match, but had to struggle to get the win because the guy kept coming back. He didn't put his guy down.
Yeah.
If he put his guy down early, the next time he's in the ring with a Danielson, a Moxley, you name it, whoever. Well, this guy just took out this guy in 5 minutes. What can he do to this guy? Like, you got to show someone is dominant. They either do this. They make Wardlow squash matches, or every match drags on for 10 minutes too long sometimes. Sometimes, one guy's just better than the other. This is a match where Dustin Rhodes, who's been in the business for 30 years, can take a loss at the end of his career to a guy they're trying to push to the moon. This segment was 15 minutes long. It felt like it was over 20.
I honestly either expected them to, like, carry him off after they did the thing with the cinder block, or once he begrudgingly crawled back in the ring against everybody's orders, got crushed.
Yeah, that's the way it should have been.
Yeah, I didn't expect there to be a match.
What this match should have been, because the whole thing about Swerve is that he's ruthless, right? He's willing to do things others aren't. Breaking into Hangman Page's house, you know, hanging him from the corner to win a Texas death match, correct?
Yeah, doing things.
What he should have done. So Dustin's ankle gets crushed on top of a cinder block.
Yes, he shouldn't be one that she shouldn't be allowed to compete after that happens.
Everyone, the ringside referee, you know, or the ringside doctor, the referees, they're all trying to take him back. He turns, he pulls himself back into the ring, and the referee's like, do you want to go? From that point on, Swerve should have spent every bit of 5 minutes trying to rip his ankle from his body and having the referee at that point just stop the match for the safety of Dustin Rhodes. Just been like, nope, we have to stop this because you're going to essentially end his career.
Yep.
It should have been that.
We should not have had shattered dreams.
But here's the problem. The second Swerve got into that match, how often did he go to the leg?
None. There was no. They avoided it.
That was the problem. It should have been
one of the many problems.
Every bit of his focus, because if he's as ruthless as you've made him out to be for the past 5, 6, 7 weeks, it should have been just, oh, you have an injury? You know, this is where they do well with Jay White. As much as I might not, you know, fully like Jay White, Jay White would have taken Dustin's leg as a trophy by the end of the match.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
He would have dragon-screwed after dragon-screwed and pilmanized the ankle and then sat in a chair and laughed at him while he's writhing in pain. It would have been the perfect thing that you could have done. But instead, as you both said, they turned it into a 20-minute back-and-forth match, and it's just like, for fuck's sake.
It was only
see Dustin Rhodes in this.
It was only 10 minutes. Felt much longer than that. And that's your problem right there. On a pay-per-view, we have time to fill. Then guess what? Give other matches more time, or guess what? End 5 minutes early.
Ooh.
Doesn't hurt. You could spread it. If you're pulling this match, you need to fill a 15-minute segment, and you only need 5 minutes worth of content, give each match another minute. I think you'd been okay.
Yep.
All right, let's get to the next match.
All right, your next match. Okay, so remember how I talked about that the fans really support a heel? We saw that with Swerve. Like, he tried to break Dustin's ankle, and they cheered him. And they were doing the Who's House, Swerve's House all the time.
Yep.
The fans for this next match, boy, did they have opinions for someone in the match. And not just that, apparently his tag team partner had some words for him. It is Chris Jericho. Sammy Guevara, Les Six Gods, tag teaming with Sting and Darby Allin, taking on the Don Callis family, Konosuke Takeshita, and Powerhouse Hobbs, and the AEW tag team champions of Ricky Starks and Big Bill.
At least they tried to convolute the story with Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. At least they made an attempt, so that was fine.
Yeah. Rock, did you hear about Darby and Allin's comments coming to the ring?
No.
So a certain someone was in the ring, and Darby basically told him to fuck off before the match, his tag team partner. For those who don't know, a story dropped earlier in the day that may have
Not even a story dropped. Like, that's the problem.
Allegations dropped.
Allegations, alleged just randomness of maybe something happened. There was no story. I'm just going to put that out there. No story, because I'm covering our ass. No story was said. Alluded to. Things could have happened because someone responded with a heart. Anyway, continue.
So, let's just say that a certain demo god had a very mixed reaction in the crowd that night.
Sure did.
Because people read the internet. That's what happened. And that's
You had people singing his theme song as normal. And
then the match started.
Yeah. And then he got tagged into the ring and holy shit, the fans let him hear it.
And that's as far as we're going with the story, because
we don't know what's going on.
We know nothing.
Yep. The match itself was a bit of a clusterfuck.
You could tell that Sting, I think, was he forgot where he was in the match for a couple of things.
Yeah. Sting looked a little bit his age for this.
Yeah, at least that goes to show that, like, there's a reason why he's on a retirement tour right now.
Yeah, there between Jericho and Sting, there was some clunkiness. Now, when you had people like Konosuke Takeshita get in the ring, and you had Darby Allin become, you know, just the bump monkey that he is, things improved with them in the ring.
Yeah,
and a little bit with Ricky Stark as well.
Yeah,
but overall, this just...
Everybody under the age of 40 did very well.
That's a very good way to put it. But yeah, this was one of those. There was about a 3-match span in this pay-per-view where you just kind of had stuff happen. And it was like, it took the crowd out of it. I mean, the crowd had some opinions on someone in this match, but you could tell they just were not invested in the match itself. They just wanted opinions heard about someone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was kind of a weird mishmash together with the situation with Kenny. So
yeah,
you can kind of understand how it lost people, because I mean, they kind of just sort of shoehorned it together with, you know, glue sticks and popsicles and
all that jazz. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one other thing about this match, speaking of Kenny, that slightly bugged me in the build up to this. So a week or two ago, when Jericho announced that Kenny would not be able to perform, He basically
made it sound like he was dying, just as an FYI. That's the way he talked.
So the way that he put that out there, but then he also said, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rock, like, I'm going to make sure that, like, we have our tag titles or our tag title shot ready for when you come back.
I don't remember his exact words. No.
But he basically was like, he wasn't going to replace him. Within 7 days, he then offered the tag team title shot to Sammy Guevara on Friday.
It's television. The show's got to go on without Kenny. He's replaced.
The one thing I would have done is I would have had Kenny offer it to him.
Kenny's not incapable of doing that at the moment. So here we are.
It just felt awkward to me. That's all I'm saying.
Disagree. I'm just they wrote that character's been ran off television for the foreseeable future. Here's his replacement, Sammy Guevara,
who was heel for about a week and a half.
The whole situation is kind of janky.
They're good. We reset. It's 2024 now, so it doesn't matter. It's all is new again.
Yeah, everybody's whatchamacallit resets to zero. Win loss.
Exactly.
Records.
Exactly. All right. What's next? Team Sting won.
All right, yeah, Team Sting won. Next up, your AEW TBS Championship. Julia Hart taking on Abaddon.
Match was fine.
Yep, I thought they worked hard. I thought they put together a good match.
Abaddon is not a pay-per-view contender.
Well, no. They also haven't. If they had spent more time building her up on TV instead of having her just kind of like, oh, let's use Abaddon for the next TBS title defense. Maybe, but no. They're just like, we're going to use Abaddon because she's creepy and Julia's creepy and it's a creep fest instead of building her up properly.
So they gave her 2 weeks worth of wins on Rampage that no one watches and or whatever show. You know what I mean? They tried for like 2 weeks. Here's Abaddon. And then she got the win over on Collision in the tag. I don't know if she pinned her or Sky Blue, one of them.
It wasn't enough.
It wasn't. You can't build up a championship contender who has not been on television all year in a consistent manner. Going, hey, the difference between her and Rio has won stuff, been on television, people know who she is. Abaddon would have been perfect for 2 months ago in the spooky season. You could have,
or while they were using her more on TV.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is you're trying to portray Julia Hart as the spooky girl, right? She has the entrance, she has all of that. You put her up against Abaddon, who's even spookier.
I would say they're spooky with Julia Hart.
But she's doing she's doing a mystical thing. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, spooky is the wrong, because Abaddon's spooky. I get the point.
The whole thing is you're setting Julia Hart apart from the other women with this mystic thing, and then you put her up against Abaddon, which is the far extreme of that, and it doesn't make her seem special. It makes her seem normal in that respect.
Again, I guess. I guess that's a good way to put it. But Abaddon, she doesn't work in this role unless you build her properly, and they haven't. This goes back to the original statement of, this is Dynamite extended.
Yeah.
Because of the matches like that. But at least they got a spin of positive. This was another women's match on the show. And it was different women. It was more than just Britt Baker, the Britt Baker show when she was just on the pay-per-views. So that's positive. So we
Rock, is there a negative?
She did not belong on the pay-per-view, so that's your negative.
Not enough of a build.
Negative. Positive. Different women on the pay-per-view. Both sides of the coin, y'all. Both sides of the coin.
Woo!
Next match.
And Julia won with kind of a moonsault.
Next match.
They covered it well by being like, oh, she used her knees. I was like, okay, that works.
It was like the Alexa Bliss. Yeah. Yep. Next.
All right, next up, we have our TNT Championship match. No rules, no holds barred, whatever they wanted to call it.
No DQ.
Sure, that thing. Your champion, Christian Cage, the Patriarch, taking on Adam Cliff Topeland.
Okay. I get the idea behind the gear. It was like, that had to be part of the... I don't get why that had to be part of the story. But they did it. Flashback to Mania 22 gear. Sometimes, it's me over here. You can leave history alone sometimes, and you don't have to call back the things in your career. You could just set up a different story, and you have different gear, and just talk about a different story. You didn't need a wedge. Hey, this was my Mania 22 gear here in AEW, because we're going to do a flaming table spot. I just
leave the memories alone.
Exactly. I didn't need it. It didn't add anything to the story you're telling, but they wanted to tell it. So
especially for someone who didn't even realize that was his Mania 22 gear until the next day.
He didn't? Is that what
he
said?
Know. Oh,
no. Oh.
I had no idea. Because I don't have that kind of wrestling memory. So I was just like, oh, he's wearing regular pants because it's an ODQ match. Cool. And then the next day I saw it on some social media. I'm like, oh, okay.
They mentioned it on commentary too.
Yeah.
I remember hearing it on commentary as well.
I don't know. My kid was probably asking me a question or something.
Probably. That makes sense. This was good. One of the better matches on the show.
It worked. I think it worked for who was wrestling and why they were wrestling. And this way, it's kind of like they left. They basically put their entire legacy as a tag team and as opponents and as best friends. And they put it into a wrestling match.
Yep.
They included the tables, ladders, and chairs that they're famous for. They included almost concertos, which they are famous for. All kinds of stuff. I thought, you know, for the story they were trying to tell and the feud that they're trying to go with, it was exactly what it needed to be. It was not, like you said, it was not a barn burner. I wouldn't say it's the best match I saw that night or even this month, but for what it was, it did the job.
The flaming table, though, they had to do a lot of fluid.
They lit it once.
Which, by the way, they said they're using a comically amount of fluid the first time they set it up. And then it was like, oh, it went out already. And then they quickly had them come to, well, this thing goes out really, really quick, so you need to douse it with more.
It evaporates. Yada, yada, yada.
All the excuses. Which is fine. But you first said they're putting a comically a large amount on it the first time, and then it didn't. it's cool. Which makes it really awkward because Edge wasn't supposed to spray it, so he's just squeezing the bottle, trying to get it to work again.
Well, at first, when I saw him go for the lighter fluid, my first thought was, oh God, Edge, do not put lighter fluid on an already lit table. And then the camera pans down and you see the fire went out, and I went, oh, that's why.
I did the same thing.
Because I'm just thinking at first, he's like, yeah, I'm going to add lighter fluid. I'm just like, that thing's going to shoot up into your hand, and we're going to have an ESPN update of Adam Copeland is sent to the hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, then the fire went out, and the part that I was laughing about was like, so Edge is sitting there, and he's putting two bottles of lighter fluid on this thing to keep it, you know, to have it stay lit. And the entire time, Christian is just sitting on the ring apron, teetering back and forth.
That was Nick Wayne.
I thought it was Christian, and then Wayne got put into that spot.
I thought Edge punched Nick. Yeah. No, maybe you're right. You're right.
It was Christian was buying time on the apron waiting. And then, it was Nick Wayne came along and, that powerbomb.
Yeah, I kind of missed the mark a little bit there.
We talked about it.
I guess from a Nick Wayne perspective, that's probably better for him. But, yeah.
Rock and I were going over the logistics of this on Saturday. I thought that he overshot him, sent him to the back edge, clipped it. Rock was bringing up the point, and I can see this, that number one, Nick's not really that big of stature. So him hitting that table may not have put him through it.
That's what the problem was, because he actually hit the table properly.
I thought he hit the far end of the table more than anything. Edge kind of powerbombed him a little bit too far. Because the way he kinda hit was with his lower back as opposed to his entire back, which is kinda why the table sort of fell the way it did. That's the way I saw it.
Why the table flipped instead of broke.
Yeah,
where I saw his ass hit it, which there's no ass to hit it. It was closer to the middle.
Yeah,
and there was nothing wrong with how they did it.
No, they were probably doing it to keep him safe from getting fully. Yeah, so he hit it right. It's just
that
yeah.
was the quickness of he did it too quick and not enough authority to go through to be safe. But he didn't overshoot it. It was my original point. He did not overshoot it. It was just placement of it. That's all.
Well, and I think Lindsay also brought up a good point of the fact of Nick Wayne's wearing, an overshirt and a t-shirt. If you put him directly into the middle of that table lit, that cloth is going to ignite.
Unless you do things beforehand to prevent that, but
yeah,
which they usually do.
Yeah, but
in any case, nobody got set on fire, and that's okay.
That's okay. And Cliff Edge Copeland won the TNT Championship
for about 15 seconds, 30 seconds,
about a minute,
about 3 minutes.
Well, no, but he was
Did
coherent
somebody
enough
say,
to celebrate.
Somebody say 3 minutes. Yeah, so he hit the kill switch, got the win. Kill switch came down, cashing in. Christian's like, no, bitch, give it to me. Give it to me. Reluctant gives it to him. Christian wins. Woo! Still, once again, TNT champion. Christian Cage! Woo!
Three time.
It fits the character, but God, does this feel like a wet fart.
I mean, everybody kind of knew it was coming.
We did, and it was especially the thing of, like, with Luchasaurus, I'm sorry, Killswitch, winning the 20-man Battle Royal, you knew it was going to play a role in everything.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to interject himself a la Seth Rollins and turn it into a triple threat and do the whole, like, which side is he on? Because, you know, that could have, if you had Adam get screwed that way, it would be like, okay. But to have, like, the win and then the cash in and then it go back to Christian, part of it feels like, what the hell was this for? You know, what was the last 20 minutes of this for if it was just, yeah, we're going to hotshot it right back to him?
I guess just to keep the heat on Christian.
So we'll see what happens on television going forward. All right, let's see the next match.
All right, your next match is the finals of the Continental Classic. You have Eddie Kingston putting all of his belts into the pot, picking on his friend, John Moxley.
All right, quick things. Brian Danielson, really good on commentary, helped elevate this match.
Yes.
They had a really good match. Kingston had new gear.
I loved Danielson on commentary being like, how the hell did I lose to Kingston?
Yeah.
And then mentioned,
same time, like, he did such a good job of just, like, cutting him down, but also being like, but I still respect the fact, like, if you don't want to be in a standing striking match with Eddie Kingston, he's much better with his hands. I'm much better with my legs, but he's much better with his hands. Like, he did a really good job of just, like, cutting him down, but also giving him his due, too.
It's like, now he's wearing kick pads. I'm sure to point that out. I thought Danielson added to the match in terms of commentary. Honestly, that would be a great role for him when his time is up.
Yep.
Because he could tell the stories. And even when his boy John Moxley lost, he told the story. Like, I mean, to give the devil his due, for someone who went and watched all Japan and all the things, yada, 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 this is a big deal for Eddie Kingston to win this match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They hugged afterwards after Kingston
won. After beating the holy hell out of each other.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good finish, good ending. Now he has three belts.
It's going to be one heavy-ass suitcase.
So I guess that means he has to defend the Ring of Honor on that show, the New Japan on that show, and the Continental. Are they all going to be defended separately, or is he going to do the whole thing of they're all just one?
We'll find out soon. Well, I don't know. Let's get to this main event.
All right. The main event of the evening, we have for your AEW World Heavyweight Championship, the Triple B belt, your hometown boy, MJF, taking on Samoa Joe.
Their scumbag.
Yep. He's our scumbag. Right as the match was about to start, who would show up but Adam Cole?
Yeah.
Surprise.
Brings his crutches on down to the ring. What, Rob?
This was a really long beatdown.
Yeah.
Props to MJF for taking his ass whooping like this. Injured, beat up, all the things. You could tell he's just physically not there anymore.
No.
He needs rest.
He's working one-handed.
Yeah.
Literally.
One-handed, one-legged. He's just beat to shit. You could tell.
Half the man he used to be.
Being world champion for a year wore him down. It's clear.
Well, not just being world champion, but also don't forget, he was the Ring of Honor tag team champion and was doing opening and closing duty.
Yeah, my point was, when he won the world title and became the world champion for the year, he wrestled double the schedule he was doing when he wasn't. He doubled his schedule. You saw him wrestling on television when he really wasn't wrestling on television before that. He wrestled a lot on television. He worked his ass off for this past year.
Yeah.
And he did things in matches he probably regrets, but he was the definition of the world heavyweight champion. the guy, he worked his ass off, yeah, and his body paid for it. Him doing an F5 after a ref bump with his bad arm and everything, very impressive. Him tapping, the arm falling, great way to end it. Great finish.
Yeah,
the referee looked confused.
Which is great, because like when it's such a trope in wrestling, when you do that, like no one expects that arm to drop a third time, never. So the fact that they ended with that, and like everybody was confused, and it like sucked the air out of the room so hard. It was really, really good job.
That was my, used to be as a kid growing up, that was my favorite submission finish, because you weren't used to people tapping out in the early 90s, especially on WWF television. It was the arm thing. One, two, and then it would drop for the third and be like, okay, he's passed out. I love that growing up, because it was a nice finish before everyone's quickly tapping and whatever. And then, but as a kid, you're growing up, you're watching, the baby face got his arm up. He's going to fire back up, and then the elbow to the midsection and fight out of it, and so on and so forth. It was a great, great setup. So for it to work here in 2023, got people surprised. I like that. Thought that was well done. The match could have been 5 minutes shorter, but it's the main event. They had to do something. They had to drag it out. Mojo's your World Heavyweight Champion, and then he just walks away. Pay-per-view's over. Fade to black. Brent, pick 'em results.
No. We missed something.
Oh, what happened?
So MJF loses the match. At one point during the match, he's asking for his Dynamite ring, and his buddy, in the worst best man part of any wedding, can't find the ring. Whoops.
But he found it. He did find it.
He did find it eventually. But after the match, Adam Cole is getting into the ring, gonna help console his BFF, his bro Chacho, when four masked men show up at ringside.
Who had to carry the Arch tag team titles with them, by the way.
They had to carry the belts to remind you that they are the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions.
They had to make sure you knew.
They get into the ring, they grab MJF, they grab Adam Cole, one of the masked men has a chair, and both MJF and Cole are begging to be hit over the other. Hit me! No, hit me! Lights go out.
Yep.
And when it comes back up, Adam Cole is sitting in the chair.
Huh. Imagine that.
Well, he couldn't stand, guys.
That's true. And he pulls his hair back, and the masked men take off their... Wait, it switches to MJF, and then it cuts back, and we see who the masked men are. It's Wardlow.
But why?
It's Wardlow, Roderick Strong, and the Kingdom.
Taven and Bennett.
Taven and Bennett, your World Tag Team Champions.
But why? Why would you do it? Why? I thought we were friends. Oh my god, I thought you, we became, oh my goodness.
And then MJF got beat down again.
Yep.
Wardlow hit his powerbomb, Cole produces the devil mask, and now we fade to black.
Okay, if you follow television, all logically adds up, all the pieces play. You pin them all together. Cole's the one who set up Samoa Joe into the title shot. He hit the button to play the video. All the things, the conspiracy theories. It all logically can be fit and tied together and make sense. And Adam Cole should have been the guy to be the devil. Problem: Adam Cole is seriously injured and shouldn't be flying to television every week. So what do you? I get it. But it's. He's seriously injured.
I have one other issue with all of this.
Just one?
I have more, but continue.
My biggest problem with this whole thing is, okay, Adam Cole is the devil. He's doing all of this to get back at MJF, correct?
Yeah.
Now, logically, I want you to explain to me one thing. And aside from the fact that he's injured, we're going to put that aside.
No, because that's my answer. He's injured.
I get that. But the whole point of this story is, okay, so he goes out to screw MJF out of the world title, but yet he's not the one getting the title.
It's about taking everything away from the man who took everything away from him, because everything got taken away from Adam Cole because he came out to try to help his best friend. And when everything got taken away from him, he decided, well, since I had everything taken away from me, I want to make sure everything's taken away from you, including your most prized possession, your World Heavyweight Championship. And if it wasn't going to be me, it's going to be the guy who I got injured trying to help you, you know, in with the whole whole thing with back at Grand Slam. So that's why he's trying to take everything away from MJF. That's the logical answer I got for you. That's the best I got.
Okay.
But he's injured.
If he wasn't injured, you could go further back and being like, I asked you for 5 more minutes and you said no. So now I'm taking everything from you.
Yeah, there you go. More logic. Case remembers more things about this company.
It's because I watch it on a very regular basis.
Yeah, that kind of helps. Yeah.
So
before you continue, Brent, here's the thing. Okay, you look at the group. Roderick Strong, Wardlow, Taven, and Bennett. Great bunch of guys. Wardlow's now back from being back to being a henchman. When a year and a half, 2 years ago, he was the biggest babyface in the company after beating MJF. And now he's back into the role he was in when he was with MJF.
Boy, did they drop that ball.
Repeatedly. Like, they've done it a few times with him, putting him in different factions, trying to make him into something.
But you had something.
Coming back into this position.
They had the ball.
He was doing really well as the initial TNT champion. And then...
He also beat MJF, and then MJF immediately shit on everything, cut the promo, and then said fuck the company and left. Basically fucking over the entire angle they had worked 6 months for, killing Wardlow in the process.
I have one other thing. So the devil storyline was getting us to this point, getting us to World's End.
Yep.
You've taken everything from MJF.
Yes.
He's off the roster page. He's lost his title. He's a broken man. You've done all of that.
Yes.
What the fuck does this group do next?
Defend the Ring of Honor tag team titles this March at whatever the name of the pay-per-view is. I don't know.
But you know what I mean? It's like the entire storyline has been, we want to screw over Max. You've just screwed him over. Now this feels like the fur of like, we don't know what any of this is about anymore.
Because everyone's injured. That's the whole part of the problem with this storyline. Everyone's injured that needs to be playing parts. They started a storyline when Cole got hurt as a probably a reason to work him around, to keep him involved and kind of get out of this story with MJF and BFF and whatever. Just fine. It works. The wrinkle to this entire story and where it got it's screwed, MJF got hurt. So you had to finish the story with two of the main characters hurt. So now following up with it, MJF should not be on your television, especially as banged up as he is going forward. Is he under contract? It's only for him and Tony Khan to really know.
If you look at the AEW roster page,
He's under contract.
Ooh.
So, and then Adam Cole should not be traveling to television because his ankle's busted.
I mean, he could cut all his promos via satellite.
He can, yes, but he shouldn't be. Not the first promo.
So he does, but I mean, he could do the first one live, which makes sense, 100%, to kind of just be like, here's why I did it. And then if they really want to cover their butts, he'd be like, now that we've done what we've done, I'm going home. You guys can all go screw yourselves and I'll come back when I'm good and ready.
And here's a better one. If you know what the stories are going to be for 2 months, have them cut all the promos backstage on the one time you get them to television and not have them to miss therapy and, you know, fly everywhere for 3 days and stuff and just cut the promos and just air them every week.
That would also work.
They won't because the television changes every week. And two, they'd rather have him fly to be live if they're going to do anything. I don't know what you do with this group. The group is a collection of people that Wardlow's just now fitting into. The Devil's Kingdom. I don't know.
Everybody else works in the group. They all have good connection. And then Wardlow's just there because he also hates Max.
And with Max gone, here's the thing. Did he really screw Max?
Wardlow did nothing.
No, he didn't.
Well, no, I guess they used him to help beat up everybody else.
Well, here's the problem with all of this. If you really want to like, oh, we're going to look at history, Joe screwed over Wardlow. And yet now Wardlow's going to help him get the world title.
I mean,
I've heard the thing of like, yeah, you made the deal with the devil. Joe made the deal with the devil to get the title. And if the whole thing is, okay, so Adam Cole gets a future shot out of all of this, this is what it's going to lead to, in theory. Yes. You screwed Max, so it's going to put us in the position of, like, when I'm healthy and when time is ready, you're going to give me a shot at the belt. Okay, Joe now knows he's got four people that he's going to have to contend with. What the? All of this together, I don't know.
A lot of audibles being called in this storyline.
And it's one of those things of like, yes, in the end, I'm going to let this play out. I want to see where this goes. The most important promo is going to be this Wednesday, in theory.
Yep, for sure.
Because if it's anything where it's, I mean, if it's just simply, hey, we wanted to screw Max, we did it, yay, this is gonna get hit like a lead balloon, essentially. Because I think most people are going to go, okay, yay. Now you've got Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, you've got essentially new Undisputed Era, but without Kyle O'Reilly.
Or New Kingdom with Roderick Strong.
Devil's Kingdom with this group. But what comes next? Is it now, we're going to try and take over AEW?
They already did. They've already done it. That's something for another time, because I'm losing my voice. Tell us how bad she threw.
All right, so for our pick 'em results, we had seven people pick, well, six people and an inanimate object.
Uh-huh.
Coming in seventh place, even though I messaged Rock for the answers to this and never got the response, the eight ball went 6-3.
Wow.
It missed two matches.
Okay.
In fifth place, going 6-5, so just over 500, is the thrower, our expert, Lindsay Ward, and Subway.
She's still batting over 500.
Still over 500. Yep. So she still knows stuff. Yep.
Yep.
Even though she threw, she clearly threw.
In third place, going 7-4, was the godfather of extreme, Rob Parks, and myself, because I thought they would take a chance on a match or two. And I mean, ultimately, one of them I got right. It was just the second match.
Gotcha.
And then going first place at 9-2 are the other two people on this call, Casey and Rock.
Yay.
Look at us go. Did we get the same two wrong?
I got Chris Statlander and...
You got different ones wrong. You both got Statlander wrong. Everyone picked Statlander. No one thought Willow.
Yeah.
Ishii had MJF winning.
Yes, that's what it was.
Okay.
And Rock, you had the heels winning the All-Star 8-Man.
Yeah, because I thought they were going to put Jay White over, and they didn't. So.
I mean, putting that sound logic. In my defense, my kid told me to pick MJF to win. And I let him choose for me.
I thought it was going to be MJF wins, and then you reveal the devil that would take him out, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Here are the three numbers. Kaish, I'm going to give you three scores. You tell me what score belongs to what team. You have 663, 745, and 301. Your teams are a team led by myself, a team led by Brent, team led by Robin Subway.
Ooh.
So, who got what number?
I'm going to say you got the highest number.
Okay.
And then I'm going to say Brent got the second highest number and Robin Subway got third.
Okay, you got one of those answers correct. The other two were wrong. Team, what was that again? Robin Sub had the lowest score at 301.
Oh.
Brent had 745 for him and Jobber.
Yes.
Me and the wheel got 663 points.
You had the wheel?
I had the wheel.
Oh.
I got 606 and still finished second.
Very impressive. But had Rock? I known that you had the wheel, I might have picked Brent's team to win.
Brock. Explain my situation.
You're still picking people.
I was picking people, but also my partner was Jobber, who was not around, and yet I still picked in his spirit.
That's fine.
But that's better than a wheel.
It's better
that's
than a
why,
wheel.
If I had known that Rock had the wheel, I would have picked you to win. 100%.
No. Hang on. Rock, explain Jobber.
Jobber actually gave you some picks.
No, he sure didn't.
Yes, he did on this last one. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. I picked in his spirit the whole time.
No.
Yes, it was. Because the whole thing was, remember, I reviewed it later with him, and he was like, oh, yeah, no, I would have picked those, like, that style. But I ended up picking, like, Jade Cargill, CM Punk, and Sting just simply based upon record.
Was it this one that you picked on? This one maybe you picked on your own. Hold on.
This one I fully picked on my own. Because he wasn't around.
No, because there was one draft. I did get picks from him.
That was two before where he had put in like suggestions at the very end.
Yeah, I know I was getting them from him live at one point. I know I got him for one of the drafts.
It wasn't this one. This one was just me in his spirit.
In his spirit. Okay. Well, you're still human
because picking, you were saying like this was quote unquote jobber's pick, and I had to go, shit, who would he pick?
Yeah. No, I tried to get on one for this one. I tried.
Yeah.
It's the one before that I got picked from. Anyway, doesn't matter. You still finished first. Congratulations to Brent, everybody. Woo!
Well done.
This is what, like the fourth one in a row?
Something like that. Which means this Saturday, go again. Go again. This time you have the jobber on your side making picks where he'll just throw a loophole in everything you want to do.
Because he's tempted just to let him pick the entire team this time. I'm half tempted to be let go.
No, you have to contribute. It's called teamwork. He makes the dream work. That's the way it goes. But now
I can't wait for Sunday when I have the wheel and we can see how I did overall.
I have an idea.
I wanted the wheel to be Tim. That was the only
It was getting close.
That was great. By the end of the season, I was like, oh, could this happen?
Hey, we got pay-per-view week. Scores could change. You never know. Find out. Finale of WTR Fantasy WWE Edition will be on Sunday. Follow up with the draft this Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern. But Thursday is the rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. We're going to give out the Ramblin' Awards for 2023. Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern. Steve Moreno is live, as mentioned, with the Fantasy Draft, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, and plus the Greater the Great Debate of the Blame Robs this Saturday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. Sunday, as mentioned, is the Fantasy Draft. Next Monday night, live, 11 p.m. Eastern, is the Raw Post Show. CM Punk is back. Check out this week's Raw Post Show. We talked everything that happened, including the return of the most electrifying man in all of entertainment, The Rock, as he wants to sit at the head of the table. So yeah, it's the Raw Post Show. Check it out. Mondays, 11 p.m. Eastern. At Steve Maria Live on Facebook, Twitter, and the website.
CBRadioLive.com.
At Wild Talk Radio. At CB Radio GOE. At King Kins. At Lone Jobber. At Wade Manson. At Kyle Drummond. Final thoughts on the show, Keish.
I enjoyed it. Didn't feel like I sat and watched wrestling as long as I did, so that was good. Speaking of which, I know the last time something like this got mentioned, the only reason I sometimes watch AEW pay-per-views in parts is just because sometimes I watch it while I should be doing other things like my job, because I can't watch things live. If I could watch them live, I'd probably sit through the whole thing.
I watched this in parts because I just didn't feel like watching it live.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you for watching it in parts. I'm just for my personal thing. I could watch them all in a row if need be.
If it was affordable to do it the proper way, yes. Anyway, get it on HBO Max. I'll watch them live.
Yeah.
Overall, it was a pay per view. I think when it comes to this, there are some things that they need to work on, and this highlighted what some of those are. I'm not a doom and gloom person. I'm not sitting there like, you know, yay, they screwed up, or like wanting to see things, you know, come tumbling down. I honestly just want to see them improve. And that takes them taking a real look in the mirror and being like, you know, okay, did these matches work? Did they not? What are some things that we can do with it? Hopefully they'll learn from it.
Hopefully. Make sure you follow Case on the socials at Kyle Driver. It's Instagram and Twitter. He's a Twitter fiend. He posts a lot. He does all the things you'd like to see on Twitter. He reposts. He hashtags. He comments. All the things.
Boy, do I.
Just link in this description. Buy his merch.
Yes. So that's and then if you buy my merch and then you post it, I'll repost it. Guaranteed.
There you go. Prince on the socials at King Kins. He talks on these shows a lot. That's kind of his deal. Anyway, this has been Subaru Not So Live, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We're back again at this for Sting's final match. Ooh. I think that's where it goes.
Revolution is the next pay-per-view.
Then yeah, that'll be Sting's last match.
Alright, we'll be back for Sting's last match. Subaru Not So Live, live. But check out all the fine programming all week long. Long Nairs on Wild Talk Radio Network. Shoot live right here at wildtalkradio.com. Twitch.tv/WTRLive. And
TBRadioLive.com. Everyone brace and make impact. The rally for rules you pay back. No, I can't ignore. This is what you waiting for. Fire in the hole and then we shine. You know it's all about the flow.
WildTalkRadio.com.